Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never.
It's 4:33, Wednesday's Downtown. Rich Kimble and Bruce Pratt here for this week's Sports Lit 101. And more Yankee discussion this week. Another essay from the collection edited by friend of the show, David Crowell, The New York Yankees in Popular Culture.
Yeah, actually, we're going to talk about two. I'm going to talk about one of the essays by Jeffrey M. Katz called How Do You Solve a Problem Like the Yankees? Points out, and this is a connection I've made in my mind, but I didn't think of the importance of it before. The first really popular song about a particular ball player was Jolton Joe. And it was scribbled down by a guy on a napkin when he heard that this 56-game hitting streak was over. Gave it to Les Brown. Les Brown said to his arranger, arrange this, we got a hit. We're going to go with Jolton Joe. There have been others since, but that was the first one about a specific player.
Although I would go back to the dawn of time, the early days when Slide Kelly Slide became a big national hit.
That's true. That's true. But what I'm talking about is the title. The title told you who it was about.
Right.
Jolton Joe. But when you think about Joe DiMaggio, for many people, it's Mr. Coffee and Chilling for a Bank, right? Because they didn't see him play. I'm just old enough to have seen, according to my father, though I don't really remember it, Joe DiMaggio on television. I certainly remember the 55, 56, 57, 58 World Series because we always watched them together.
Well, he retired in what, 51?
51. So I was born in April of 51. So yeah, I think it's an old family myth. But what's interesting is some people would say, I don't go for the, I'm not a big GOAT greatest of all time. But people would say that the greatest American novel is Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea. And the whole theme that runs through Old Man and the Sea is DiMaggio, right? The great DiMaggio and how the protagonist is trying to bring his huge fish home the way DiMaggio has a 56-game hitting streak. And what I realized as I was reading this book, what's different now, there were only three networks. Yes, there was WPIX and WOR in New York. Big cities had five radio stations. Five. I have 500 on my cable, I think. I have no idea what. And when we saw baseball players, we didn't just see them on the field. We saw them on variety shows. We saw them on talk shows. They were celebrities of a different kind.
Right.
And baseball, as we know, was the preeminent sport really until the 1960s. You can't really argue much against that. But there were shows. There was a show. Now, I don't remember seeing this, but there was a show in 1956, because I was only five, called Salute to Baseball, hosted by Art Linkletter, starring such luminaries as Art Carney, Gary Cooper, Dave Garraway, Eddie Fisher, Roy Rogers, and Ed Sullivan, along with baseball royalty Roy Campanella, Leo DeRocher, Ford Frick, Carl Hubber, Willie Mays, and Robin Roberts. But the most publicized segment was Yogi Berra doing ballet.
Whoa.
Now, I don't think you're going to see Travis Kelce doing that, right? and the reason that the Yankees became, in a sense, America's team, and I'm not suggesting it's like the Cowboys BS, but was because that was what was internationally known. When people thought about American baseball, they knew about the New York Yankees. They may not have known about the Pittsburgh Pirates, but they knew about the New York Yankees. So all the things that happened in New York became magnified, and became bigger than life. Yankee hating is, you know, the damn Yankees, gentlemen's prefer blonde. And there's this really interesting thing here. I want to get this from Bill Lee, who was a... Not Spaceman Bill Lee, but Bill Lee, who was a columnist for the Hartford Current when I was a kid, talking about the 1956 World Series and Larson's perfect game. Don Larson's perfect game in the 1956 World Series just served to seal the deal. It is the hated Yankees who have the Midas touch, proclaimed sports writer Bill Lee in the Hartford Current in 1959. Everything that brushes against their pinstripe uniforms turns to gold one way or another. And that was true because the way the rules were, the reserve clause, right. The unlimited amount of money you could spend on players, the unlimited amount of money you could spend on minor league right. teams.
No draft.
It wasn't until that changed that the kind of dominance the Yankees had probably will never happen in baseball again. But what this particular article talks about is how the branding of America and the branding of sports teams at different times becomes the big deal. You know, there are probably more people in Africa who know who the New England Patriots are than know who the Atlanta Falcons are. Only because they're T-shirts and hats and they see them and all that kind of stuff. And so then in the 50s and 60s, and even into through the Bernie Williams days, the Yankee brand just blew everything else out of the water.
Well, also in those days, nationally, the only games that were televised were the World Series games.
That's right. There was no Game of the Week until, 1974?
No, I think it was earlier than that, right, but it certainly wasn't around in the 50s.
Oh, I was thinking of the hockey. Yes. So anyway, the second one is David Krell's essay, and I jumped the gun by saying how excited I was to talk about this, and I am because I always like everything David has written, and this is a great companion to The Fenway Effect, but it's called Of Calzones and Costanza, and it's all about the Yankees and Seinfeld, which was really difficult for someone who's never seen an episode of Seinfeld in its entirety, but this essay is hysterical. And it says, they're talking about George Costanza, obviously, and his relationship because he works for the Yankees for some of the time. At heart, you know, a guy who wants it all and has no tools with which to achieve it. And then goes on to talk about how the way the show's negative portrayal of Steinbrenner and George Costanza's purposely negative portrayal of himself in Steinbrenner turns the whole Yankee mythos on its head. It's a really, really funny, it brings up every kind of bizarre romantic George Costanza failure or success. Talks about when he says he'll give somebody a raise and he realizes he can't give her a raise because he's not in a position to give her a raise. But they talk throughout this how if you keep sort of looking back at Yankee history prior and, well, just before Steinbrenner takes over and during Steinbrenner's time, you see that as the show sort of unravels, this sort of the Yankees, right? I mean, the Yankees that appeared on the show at different times. It's really pretty amazing because I would say they go down as some of my very favorites.
Paul O'Neill, the great Danny Tartable episode, one of my favorites.
Derek Jeter, and my favorite, Bernie Williams. I never liked a ball player better than Bernie Williams. Danny Tartable, Tartable's Throw, you know, my friend Hank Garfield's book.
About his dad.
Yeah. About his dad. And then you've got this whole way that the city reacts. The Yankees drive the bus in New York City in baseball. I don't care how good the Mets get. If they move the Yankees off the back page, the Yankees find a way to get on the back page again. Steinbrenner in those old days would say something, right? And in a city which for years had a tradition of excellence in winning championships and has been in a long, prolonged drought in all the four major sports, might change this year, we don't know. The idea that a show that's about nothing was very often about the Yankees in some interesting ways, and I now may have to go and look at some of these episodes, though.
Well, and the episode, and we've talked about it a couple times here, with the players all upset over the new uniforms in Major League Baseball, the episode where George introduces the new uniforms that shrink and cause all kinds of problems for the Yankees.
Yeah, and then that Kramer alleged just to have punched Mickey Mantle in the face after brushing Pepitone back in a fight. I mean, the whole kinds of things, Keith Hernandez from the Mets makes an appearance.
Oh, one of the great episodes of the Magic Loogie episode, which completely paralleled the Oliver Stone JFK film, but in this case, it was the Mets and somebody spitting on Kramer. I think it ended up being relief pitcher Roger McDowell. It was so brilliantly constructed. And Hernandez dating Elaine for a while in an episode was great, and being Jerry's friend and wanting him to help him move. That was fantastic.
And it talks about how the players monetize some of these things. Phil Rizzuto's bobblehead when you squeeze it, yells, "Holy cow." Holy cow, right? And just this whole taking, I love the fact you're taking these fictional characters and you're inserting them with real events and real people. And people come away from it saying, remember the time Kramer never brushed back Pepitone, right? I mean, we don't know that, right? But it's really entertaining. It reminded me of the Fenway Effect one when they talked about the Red Sox in the movies and Jimmy Pearsall and Fear Strikes Out and all that. Cross done a great job with these two books. Now, this is the older one of the two. I bought this one because I didn't really, hadn't known that much about it. But it's called Of Calzones and Costanza. It's a really good essay. And the one before that by Jeremy M. Katz. We won't go through all of these because I think people will say, Bruce, you've lost your mind. You're only talking about the Yankees. But we will be talking baseball in a couple weeks. Next week, we're talking college football.
Excellent.
Blue Power by Reg Lansbury. And I've got it in manuscript form. It's really long. It's really great about the Brian Dowling and Calvin Hill era at Yale. Wow. Kingman Brewster, the protests, the changing things, the Yogo and Goethe, interesting stuff.
Nice. And I see another couple new books that you brought in today that look very interesting.
Yes, Nebraska sent us two. One, A Schoolboy, The Untold Journeys of a Yankees Hero, Wade Hoyt with Tim Manners. He was also a Cincinnati Reds hero because he was their broadcaster for years. He was quite a good writer, Wade Hoyt, in addition to being a Hall of Fame pitcher and a painter as well. Tim Manners put his things in the writing book. I'm really excited about Perfect Eloquence, An Appreciation of Vin Scully, edited by Tom Hofarth, and with a foreword by Ron Rappaport. Oh, the Schoolboy one has Bob Costas as the person who writes the foreword. But the list of people who write these articles are just unbelievable. Just you look at who's who in baseball and the like, and they're all there. It's Vin Scully was the best, so I really...
Yeah, I was thinking about that. You can't get people to agree on a lot in sports, but I think everybody you talk with associated with baseball, everybody agrees. Scully was the greatest baseball broadcaster of all time.
I don't like to rank things, but it's easy. Scully, Ned Martin, Mel Allen, Chuck Thompson, Red Barber.
That's not a bad group right there.
Yeah, a pretty good group, and that leaves out a lot of great players, a lot of great announcers.
That's Sports Lit 101 for this week here on Downtown. 14 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Still to come, a check of what's going on. Mike Farrell from MASH, our conversation with him from earlier this year, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Tomorrow, Cajun Carey live from New Orleans. Nick Coit from ABC6 in Providence. And Tim Bissell talking craft beer on the Three Pints Dance on tomorrow's Downtown.
Hi there, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Downtown with Rich Kimble.
Feel more confident and in control of your financial life. Ameriprise Advisors can work with you to provide personalized, goal-based advice based on your short and long-term goals. Plus, you can track your investments and financial solutions with our digital tools and regular meetings. Call Ameriprise Private Wealth.